Turn with me in your Bibles, please, to Matthew chapter 24. We continue with our ongoing Sunday morning series entitled Listening to Jesus in Stereo, the Life of Christ from All Four Gospels. That is the 101st time that I have said that. Our text today will be the latter half of Matthew 24. I'm going to start by reading verses 36 through 44. But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore, you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. I have titled the message this morning, Did Jesus Teach About the Rapture? That is an important question. And it's hotly debated, believe it or not. I would find it quite odd if Jesus did not teach about the rapture, seeing that Jesus launched the church, and the rapture is the resurrection for the church and the catching up of those who are alive. Most people, when asked the question, tend to respond, oh yes, Jesus taught the rapture in John chapter 14. Now let's look at those verses, which are often used in support of the rapture. John 14, I'll read verses 2 and 3. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. I will dissect this passage in detail once we get to our studies in John 14, which isn't too long from now. But for the purpose of this message, it is important to understand that Jesus is not talking about heaven in this passage. He's talking about New Jerusalem, the city of reward that will hover over earth during the millennium. The disciples will be rewarded with inclusion in the kingdom of heaven, that New Jerusalem, because they've been faithful. So when Jesus says, I will come again and receive you to myself, some dispensationalists say that happens at the rapture. And others say that happens at the second coming. So here's my point. This text, John 14, verses 2 and 3, is inconclusive for answering the question, did Jesus teach about the rapture? Well, that leaves only one other passage that we can turn to for answering the question, did Jesus teach about the rapture? And of course, that passage is Matthew 24. Does he teach the rapture there? Now, this might surprise you, but as we will see, most dispensationalists say no. Jesus did not teach about the rapture in Matthew 24. He was teaching exclusively about the tribulation and the second coming, but not the rapture. Others, and I'm part of this other group, say that he was teaching about both the second coming in verses 29 and 30, which we looked at last week, and the rapture in verses 36 through 44, the passage we just read to open the message. Now, before we get too far along, let's answer this question. What is the rapture? I'm going to give you my definition. It's a non-technical definition, but I think it sums up well what the rapture is all about. The rapture is the resurrection of church-age saints who have died virtually simultaneous with the catching up of living church age saints by Jesus sometime before the millennium. Now, I put it that way, sometime before the millennium, because there are four views of the timing of the rapture. First is the pre-tribulation view, which teaches that Jesus will rapture the saints of the church age before the tribulation, that is, before Daniel's 70th week. That's the seven-year period of God's judgment that we often refer to as the tribulation. This is my position. It is the position of our church officially. We are pre-trib. There is also a position called mid-trib, which means that halfway through Daniel's 70th week, before the second half begins, when it really gets hot, when Antichrist is really reaching out with persecution and killing Jews and saints and so on, that's when the rapture will occur, at the mid-trib point. There is a third view called the pre-wrath position, which is not the same as the mid-trib. The pre-wrath says that the rapture occurs between the sixth and seventh seal, late in the 70th week, basically concurrent with the second coming of Christ. So that's the pre-wrath position that really just was made popular in the last 20 or so years. And then there's the post-trib position, which says the rapture will occur at the end of the tribulation, after everything's all over with, Battle of Armageddon's over, Jesus has already come. Then the rapture occurs, they say. Again, I'm pre-trib, our church is pre-trib. By the way, one's position on the timing of the rapture is not nearly as important as one's position on the timing of Christ's return. Now you think that through. To be pre-millennial is far more important than to be pre-trib. Think that through. Jesus is going to come and set up his kingdom called the millennial kingdom. Whether I am raptured up before the 7 years or in the middle of the 7 years or after the 7 years is not nearly as important as understanding that Jesus comes to set up a kingdom of 1,000 years, see? Now, I do think being pre-trib is important, but what I'm saying through this is I know of many good, solid, fundamental brethren who hold a little different position on the timing of the rapture than I do, and I can still work with them. I mean, we're still brethren that are in agreement on most everything else. But when you get a guy who doesn't believe in a millennial kingdom, you know, we're not on the same page. So that's my point here. So I don't argue about tribulation positions a great deal. I know what I believe, and I know why I believe it. And I do believe that the rapture is taught in Matthew 24, not merely the second coming. And I believe it's a pre-tribulation rapture taught in Matthew 24, as we're going to see this morning. Now look at the disciples' questions in Matthew 24, verse 3. Now as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be?" There's the first question. Number two, what will be the sign of your coming? And number three, what will be the sign of the end of the age? Three questions. As I pointed out in last Sunday's message, some commentators say that Jesus never answers the first question. Others say he doesn't answer it here in Matthew, but he does answer it in Luke chapter 21, verse 12. Still others say he answers all of the questions, including the first one, here in Matthew 24. And depending on what view you take will determine whether or not you believe Jesus teaches the rapture in Matthew 24. Now I'll just tell you, I'm in this last group. I believe that Jesus answers all three of the questions, including the first one. And he talks about the rapture in Matthew 24, and it's a pre-tribulation rapture. And I hope to demonstrate that in the message today. As I pointed out, though, in last Sunday's message, Jesus starts by answering the third question first. Verses 4 through 8 of this chapter describe the first half of the tribulation, the first 3.5 years, which Jesus sums up in verse 8 as, quote, "the beginning of sorrows," end quote. This is a term from labor and delivery. The beginning of sorrows would be the early labor pains, leading up to a baby being born, but not the most intense labor pains, which usually come later in that process, right before the baby's born. Interestingly, the first half of the tribulation parallels the first four seals in Revelation chapter 6. And I won't go into that again today because I explained it all last week. If you didn't hear that message, you can go back and listen to it. Then in verses 9 through 12, Jesus gives an overview of the second half of the tribulation, which corresponds to the fifth seal in Revelation 6. This is when Antichrist intensifies the persecution and the martyrdom of both Jews and believers. Jesus then makes a promise in verse 13. Those who endure to the end will be saved. The word there means delivered. And the word endure means to continue to take a stand for Jesus and not give in to Antichrist's demands. They will either remain alive to the end of the tribulation and will therefore continue on into the millennium, or if they die because they've been persecuted or put to death by Antichrist, they're promised to be resurrected before the millennium. So either way, Jesus makes a promise, those who endure, you'll get the blessing of going on into the millennial reign. That's a great promise. They'll be rewarded for faithfulness. Verse 14 then describes the 144,000 Jewish preachers who proclaim the gospel of the kingdom. And they probably, I'm almost assured, they will preach the gospel of salvation by grace through faith alone also, because that's the starting point. But the emphasis is on the gospel of the kingdom that prepares people for inheritance. In verses 15 through 28, Jesus gives the details regarding the second half of the tribulation. For example, we find in verse 15, Antichrist's abomination of desolation, which is the desecration of the temple and the breaking of his treaty with Israel. That's going to be a horrible time. And things only get worse after that midpoint. Jesus says, essentially, if I could sum it up, when you see that, then run. Head for the hills. For the tribulation will be intense. Antichrist will seek to kill all Jews and Christians. Don't be deceived by false reports of Messiah coming. For when I return, everyone will know it. Lightning will flash in the sky from the east to the west. It will be a terrifying blast across the night sky that everybody will see. Then the battle of Armageddon will begin. The eagles will gather together to eat the flesh of the fallen. In verses 29 through 31, Jesus tells of his second coming. And he answers the disciples' second question. What will be the sign of your coming? Verses 29 through 31. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of heaven will be shaken. Then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in heaven, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he will send his angels with a great sound of a trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. This is the sixth seal in Revelation chapter 6. And again, all of this we covered last week in much more detail. I'm just giving you an overview as we segue into this morning's material. Of course, these verses that I just read, verses 29 through 31, describe the frightful conditions immediately preceding the second coming of Christ. I should point out that the pre-wrath rapture position claims this is the rapture trumpet, but it is actually one of a series of trumpet blasts. There's the trumpet blast in 1 Thessalonians 4:16, referring to the rapture. There's this one here in verse 31. There's another blast in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 52. We won't get into that today, but those could be three different trumpet blasts referring to three different things. Interesting to think about. Now look at verses 32 through 34. Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things, know that it is near, at the doors. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Some try to see the formation of Israel as a nation in 1948, and they say the generation that saw Israel formed will also see these end times events. So they try to make this applicable to the formation of Israel and saying that those will still be alive who saw that as we go into these end times events. Frankly, I don't think the formation of Israel has anything to do with this. What's a more likely interpretation? Just as the blossoming of the fig tree in spring is followed by maturity of leaves and fruit in summer, and by the way, there's not a whole lot of time that goes on between those two things, just a few months. So the generation alive in the early part of the tribulation will be alive to see its conclusion in a matter of months thereafter. That's how I understand this. Now we come to the passage that seems to be a sticky wicket. By the way, that's a term from cricket, in case you don't know. We'll have to talk about that another time. It's a corruption of baseball. Sorry, Brits. All right, verses 36 through 44. I'll read it again. But of that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered the ark, and did not know until the flood came and took them all away, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for you do not know what hour your Lord is coming. But know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, he would have watched and not allowed his house to be broken into. Therefore you also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect. What is this saying, and what is it referring to? Those who do not see the rapture in Matthew 24 say this is referring to the second coming. But if these verses are additional commentary on the second coming, then conditions on earth at the time of the second coming will be as in Noah's day, with people carrying on life as normal, eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, not to mention oblivious to any coming judgment. But is that the case in the tribulation? No! People are going to be living in survival mode. Even in the first half of the tribulation, if we understand the chronology correctly, a quarter of the world's population will die. Now, when you see that and you start to see earthquakes and turbulences and things heating up, do you really think it's going to be like as it was in the days before the flood, where people were totally oblivious to what was coming? No. During the tribulation, the first half, I don't think people are going to be living anywhere near normal lives. It's going to be survival mode. In fact, many will know that it is God's wrath, and they will do everything they can to hide from it. We actually read about that in the book of Revelation. Right. Who are the ones taken then in verses 40 and 41? Let's read those verses again. Two men will be in the field, one will be taken and the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Those who see this as the second coming say the ones taken are taken away to judgment. The others who are left, they say, are supposedly those who will continue on into the millennium. But what is the problem with claiming that this is the second coming? Well, first in verse 36, we're told that no one knows the day and the hour. But given all of the detail and signs that Jesus has given, wouldn't the timing of the second coming be rather predictable? Furthermore, in verses 42 through 44, his coming is described as a complete shock, like a thief in the night. That is not the case with the second coming. It should be obvious. The second coming should be obvious, given all the details and signs, especially what Jesus described in Matthew 24. What then are verses 36 through 44 referring to? They are referring to the rapture preceding the tribulation, given the timing of what Jesus has just described in verses 4 through 31. And notice that verses 36 through 44 are separated by the illustration of the fig tree, verses 32 through 35, which brings closure on the previous section. Let me explain how many commentators see this section as referring to the rapture. Even though we're in the minority on this view, that the rapture is taught in Matthew 24, that's a minority position, even amongst conservative commentators, believe it or not. It is important to understand the questions asked by the disciples. Here they are again. Number one, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming? And what will be the sign of the end of the age? Has Jesus answered all of these questions in verses 4 through 31?
No.
He has not yet answered the first one. When will these things be? That is, when will all of this take place? Now remember, I said earlier that some like to say Jesus doesn't answer this question, the first question, at all in Matthew 24. Why would they say that? Because that fits their post-trib or mid-trib or pre-wrath narrative. Or in some cases, it even fits the narrative of those pre-tribbers who say that the rapture is not found in Matthew 24. But a key to understanding this text, interpreting it correctly, is found in Matthew's use of something called the chiastic structure, which he does frequently throughout the book of Matthew. You say, what's that? Well, a chiastic structure is a literary device in Hebrew that lays out the points. And when I say Hebrew, I realize the New Testament's written in Greek, but it's in Hebrew thinking. Okay? So it's a literary device in Hebrew thinking that lays out the points, boom, 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 one after another. Then it starts with the last point first and works its way backwards. That's exactly what is happening here in Matthew 24. So the disciples ask, questions 1, 2, and 3, when will these things be? What will be the sign of your coming? What will be the sign of the end of the age? And according to the chiastic structure, Hebrew thinking, Jesus starts with that last question first, answers that one first, then he goes to the second question next, and last of all, he answers the first question. Ah, knowing that helps us really understand what's happening here in Matthew 24? It helps with the interpretation. Question number one. Let's go to this then. When will these things be? Verses 36 through 44. That's the question Jesus is answering in these verses. These things is referring to the entire course of events. Tribulation and the second coming. Daniel's 70th week. So when Jesus answers the question, when will these things be? He's telling them, what will happen prior to the tribulation and second coming that gives them a frame of time, a frame of understanding as to when these things will occur? In other words, maybe we could put it this way. What starts the clock ticking on the end times calendar? There is another hint in the text that Jesus is returning to the first question, and it is the starting words of verse 36. But of. See those two words? In the Greek, this is a preposition, meaning but concerning. And what is this section concerning? That day, which is a reference to the day of the Lord, and hour, that is the timing of when the day of the Lord begins. Ah, when will these things be? When will the day of the Lord occur? What's the timing of it? That's what's happening here in this text. Now, according to Dr. John Hart of Moody, he's a professor there, he says this signals the beginning of slightly new subject matter. So it's still related to end times, but it's not the same material that Jesus has been talking about, the tribulation and second coming. He says this section refers to the imminent coming of the day of the Lord and the pre-tribulational rapture of the church. And by the way, I would commend to your reading a three-part journal article by John Hart, Should Pre-Tribulationists Reconsider the Rapture in Matthew 24, verses 36 through 44. And you can find that in the Grace Evangelical Society Journal. It's three parts. Some are in 2007, and I believe one is in 2008. But it is an excellent series of articles. Verses 36 through 44 seem to be answering the question, when will these things be? What starts the clock ticking on the day of the Lord, the tribulation and the second coming? And what's the answer? It's the rapture.
Right.
And what characterizes the rapture? Well, its timing is completely unpredictable. It could happen at any time. There are no signs preceding the rapture, technically. Now, when we start to see things heating up, we have to wonder, is the tribulation coming soon? You know, I have to wonder that. But there are really no signs preceding the rapture. It's just, it's imminent. It's going to happen whenever God decides it's going to happen. So its timing is completely unpredictable. Could happen literally at any time. And it's described like a thief in the night. Like the flood of Noah's day that was completely unexpected by the people of that age. They weren't expecting the flood. The people of Noah's day were told were going about life as normal. They were not thinking about preparing for a coming storm because there were no storm clouds in the sky. And there won't be storm clouds in the sky before the rapture occurs, at least not like storm clouds as there will be at the end of the tribulation to let everybody know that the second coming is about to occur. You see the point? Noah and his family were prepared. God delivered them from the judgment by rapturing them, lifting the ark up above the waters. Do you see that as a picture of the rapture? Like the church being lifted up above the flood tide of judgment that's going to come upon the earth below them? 1 Peter 3:20 says, in the days of Noah, a few, that is eight souls, were saved through water. They were delivered from the tribulation. Now look at 2 Peter chapter 2, verses 4, 5, and 9. For if God did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood of the world on the world of the ungodly, then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations, we could say tribulation, and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment. Again, Noah being delivered from the coming flood is an illustration of church age saints like you and me being delivered from the coming flood, known as the tribulation, Daniel's 70th week. God even uses it in that way in 2 Peter 2, 4, and 5. We also can read 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 1 through 4. But concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pangs upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. And it's very important to understand that 1 Thessalonians 5 follows right on the heels of the rapture passage in 1 Thessalonians 4. Thus, deliverance for church-age saints comes before Daniel's 70th week. Now, look back with me at Matthew 24, verses 40 and 41. Then two men will be in the field, one will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left. Who are the ones taken? Those who do not see this as a rapture text say that the ones taken are taken in judgment at the end of the tribulation. They're not taken at the rapture before the tribulation. They arrive at this conclusion from verse 39, which says, the flood came and took them all away. But the word taken in verse 39 and the word taken in verses 40 and 41 are two different Greek words. In verse 39, the word taken means removed. In verses 40 and 41, the word taken means to receive near or to take unto oneself. Heart, the commentator I quoted earlier, says the thought of this last Greek word taken is always one of accompaniment, usually in a positive sense, for close fellowship. Thus, the wicked are removed from earth in Noah's day through the flood judgment, whereas the righteous are taken near to Christ in the rapture of verses 40 and 41. Do you see the distinction? The Greek tells it all. So let me just summarize briefly. In verse 39, they are being removed in judgment. In verses 40 and 41, they are being taken in rapture. And that's what the Greek words mean. But if you add another element to this, at the end of verses 40 and 41, the word left means abandoned. Notice how it's used in Matthew 26, verse 56, same Greek word. Then all the disciples forsook him and fled. What do you think is the word abandoned? Forsook. They abandoned Jesus. So what happens to those who are left? They're left on earth. They're abandoned to endure the judgments yet to come on earth, the tribulation. If verses 36 through 44 refer to the rapture, and I believe they do, then what are we commanded to do in light of his imminent return? What does verse 42 say? Watch therefore. Watchfulness is wakefulness. In contrast to spiritual sleep or slumber that characterizes many Christians of this present age, do you remember in the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus found his disciples sleeping, and he said to them, what? Could you not watch with me just 1 hour? Couldn't you stay awake and alert for a little time to pray with me? Interestingly, watchfulness is connected with imminence in the Garden of Gethsemane. In Matthew 26, 45, he came to his disciples and said to them, this is the next time, are you still sleeping and resting? Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is being betrayed into the hands of sinners. When watchfulness imagery is connected with thief in the night imagery, then saints are urged to stay alert and not be surprised by the suddenness of the event. So the question of the hour is, are you watchful? Are you ready? Or are you slumbering and unprepared? Because what comes next after the rapture for Christians? The judgment seat of Christ. That's why we're told to be watchful and prepared. Not so we can see the rapture occurring. It's going to happen so quick, I don't think we'll even hardly know what happened. But when we stand before Jesus, we'll know what happened. In closing, I would like to make an observation. Some say Jesus did not teach the rapture in Matthew's gospel because Matthew is written to the Jews and Daniel's 70th week applies to Israel. Okay, I would argue that while the audience is Jewish by nationality, Jesus is addressing his disciples, and they're part of the one new man in Christ, namely the church, which is his body. And I can clearly demonstrate that because these disciples are called in Ephesians 2:20 the foundation of the church. All the more why they need to understand the rapture when they're going to be resurrected. The Apostle Paul, of course, is going to take off with this and run with it in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, give us a whole lot more detail. But I believe Jesus lays the foundation right here in Matthew chapter 24. If the rapture applies to the church, then why wouldn't Jesus tell his disciples about the rapture? See, it never made sense to me, this position that the rapture is not taught by Jesus anywhere. Really? This in no way excludes the rest of the passage, verses 4 through 35, from applying to Jewish saints who will read it during the tribulation. You ever think about that? I often think that during the tribulation, people are going to get a hold of a Bible. Where's that Bible my mother had? She's gone. I'm still here. I got to find that Bible. And I'm sure God will lead them maybe eventually through their reading process to Matthew 24. And they'll get a full description of what's coming in Daniel's 70th week that they're now in. But then they'll read verses 36 through 44 and connect the dots with all those who just disappeared. Where'd they go? Ah, it's explained right here in Matthew 24. Now you may wonder, why don't we hold to a mid-trib or pre-wrath position? There are lots of reasons to this. One being, in Thessalonians we're told we are not subject to wrath, and the wrath there is in the context of end times wrath. But also, here's the biggest answer in my opinion, the primary purpose of the tribulation is to bring national Israel to repentance. Daniel's 70th week is completely Jewish. It's intended to bring Israel back around to Messiah. Now, there are other purposes, but this is the primary one. Believers in Jesus, we've already received Jesus. So there would be no need for us to go through the tribulation. We're already on his side, so to speak. But some would say that unfaithful saints need to go through part of the tribulation as a sort of punishment for their bad behavior. However, in response to that, I say Jesus has already provided for their bad behavior at the judgment seat of Christ. They will be cast into the darkness outside the New Jerusalem, having to dwell on earth during the millennium. They will forfeit all the glories of the bridal city of reward. And you know what? That will be punishment far greater than having to endure a few years of tribulation on earth. So I guess the big question of the hour is, are you ready for his return? Or will you be ashamed at his coming? 1 John 2:28, and now little children abide in him, that when he appears we may have confidence and not be ashamed before him at his coming. And I believe that's a rapture reference. Are you ready? Let's bow in prayer.